Dick, when did the airplane bug bite you? Loving airplanes. When did that happen for you?
Well, it was right after World War II, and my mother, this is before my dad was a dentist and had any money, and for some reason, she took this little kid out to Fleabob Airport, which is EA number one.
Fleabob.
Sorry about that. Anyway, Fleabob Airport.
Riverside. That's an EAA chapter number one.
That's what I said, yeah. Anyway, and I remember it vividly. It was a J5 Cub, and the back was a little wider. And we were going to go for an airplane ride. And I remember that the tires had no treads on it. And they wanted me to sit down next to my mom and strap in. Well, I got down and I couldn't see out. So I stood up and I grabbed the back of the pilot seat and I held onto that and I said, no, you got to strap in. Well, there was no fine way I was going to sit down and I couldn't see anything. So I held onto the back of the seat. Somebody came out and wound up the propeller and we bounced off out across that grass field that morning. And we orbited around Riverside for a handful of minutes. And what that little kid saw outside the window would change his life forever. Now, is an incredible fascination for aviation at the expense of a more rounded character development.
What does a fighter pilot use for birth control? His personality.
His personality. Right? Yeah.
Hey, Mike, are they talking about you?
No. No, but it certainly changed my life when I got into flying. And
how old were you? What was that first experience?
Actually, I was pretty old. I was like 26 or something. My dad was in the South African Air Force, but that didn't get to me. But I was lucky enough to be here. I think it was in 72 or 70.
When you came to RAF?
I came to Oshkosh. And here was this funny-looking guy with hair on the side of his face in a big old flight suit, and he was selling right out of the back of his very big one sets of plans to build one of those things.
Yeah.
And I paid him $51. I thought it was an exorbitant sum of money. But I got a set of plans, serial number 115, and I was the first guy to finish one because I worked in a machine shop, I was a welder, and so I could
You built your airplane in your living room of your home.
Right, so yeah. I did. Yeah, I rolled up the fitted carpet and we Sally wasn't very happy about that, but we built the airplane right in the living room. And then when I got it all done, my instructor wouldn't allow me to fly it. I mean, he said, no way. This thing is, it's all backwards. There's no way it'll fly. It's too dangerous. So, and he was a pretty smart guy. We stayed with him last night, and he still remembers that. And so anyway, called up Bert, and Bert said, if you can get out to Mojave, I'll check you out in my airplane. And he did. Then he took us out to lunch, and he was very, very good. He showed me all the good points and all the bad points about the very big one. And I think that saved my life in many ways, because it did have some strange traits. And so when after we got done with the checkout, we went to lunch. Bert asked me what I did for a living, and he invited me to come and work for him. So if I hadn't have bought that set of plans, I'd still be cranking handles on a Bridgeport mill at this point.
You know, my marriage wasn't going very well at the time.
That's true.
And I needed Sally as well as Mike. I needed an office manager. And I offered them a package. I didn't offer him a salary and her a salary. Sally, why don't you stand up and say hi? Yeah. In fact, come on up here. Come on up here. I figured what I could afford to pay someone who could come in and help me build airplanes and do builder support for very Viggen.
Right.
And there wasn't anybody in the world that knew how to do that yet but you.
That's right.
And I figured I needed an office manager. Who was what my ex-wife was doing. And I came up with a number, and I says, well, how about this? Is this enough? And you said, well, what does it mean? I said, no, I want to pay both of you this amount of money. You can decide how much of it you get.
That's right.
And she can decide how much of it she gets. See, so this business of women not making as much as men, that wouldn't be my fault at all. However, they split it up. was, I mean, if they should have split it up even, right? And I don't remember what you guys did.
Okay, so I've got the yellow piece of paper that Bert gave us, that sent to us. And he says on there, I don't care how you do this, but here's $22,000 between you. Break it up however you want. I expect you out here next week.
That was in 1978, and Mike arrived just as I was finishing up and getting ready to fly the Defiant.
That's right.
And what was one of the first things we did that looked like a fun thing to do that turned into a survival situation?
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
it was in the middle of the summer.
It was, and I had never been to the desert. I lived in Indiana, which looks like this place, very green and no dry lakes at all. And here, Bert took me for a ride in his brand new
Grumman Tiger.
It's the only store-bought airplane I ever built.
Right, a Grumman Tiger that he had just bought, brand new, and he flew me around and said, see that there on the ground? That's a dry lake. And I said, wow, what causes that kind of a phenomenon? And
even Bert said, X-15 can land on.
Yeah, so Bert said, you know, an X, no, you even said, I think it was more than an X-15, whatever. Oh, it was an X-15, can land
B-70
on that lake.
B-70 landed on
right.
dry
you
lake.
Said
not this dry lake.
Right.
But
so Bert said, would you like to land on this dry lake? And, you know, I'm pretty brave. And I said, sure, why not? You know, so we came in to land, we touched down, and we stopped from here to the end of the stage. Because it was wet.
Wet? Oh,
God. He's wondering why I was standing on the brakes, and I was wondering what the hell was going on. Because Cohen Dry Lake happened to be muddy, and we didn't know it.
We didn't know it, and we stopped literally, I mean,
and
probably
was
literally
in the
length of this thing. And so then we tried to get it out.
Now let's talk about we. Who was
who
in
was
that
we?
Airplane?
It was you and Carolyn.
And my wife, Carolyn, and who founded RAF with me.
And my son, Keith,
your
was
son.
There. Yep, and me. And so we
five of us?
We tried
four.
To get four of us.
Four
Keith,
of us.
Carolyn,
Keith,
Bert.
Carolyn.
Oh, Sally wasn't with
no,
him?
No, Sally wasn't there.
Oh, Sally
okay.
wasn't on.
No, she was doing the office thing. And so we tried to, Bert
how,
tried
how
to drive
it?
It. It was hot, boy, I'm telling you. It was like August.
Now,
or
I don't
something.
Know if you've seen Cohen Lake. Cohen Lake is not the end of the world, but you can walk there from Cohen Lake.
Wow. It's just near Edwards.
It's north
it's
of
north
Mojave.
Of Edwards, yeah. So, yeah. So Bert tried to drive it out and then figured he was too heavy to drive it out, so he asked me to drive it out of the mud. And he, you and Keith.
Carol and I
and
pushed
Carolyn
on the wingtips.
Pushed on the wingtips, and Keith sat on the tail. And we finally got it to waddle its way with the nose wheel in
now,
the
now,
air.
This is with his young son sitting on the horizontal tail.
Right.
As if he's going to hold on for the flight back to Mojave.
Yeah. I don't think we thought beyond the fact
we
that
didn't
we
have
were
any tools. And the biggest problem right. is the nose gear pant
was
would fill up
mud.
With mud.
Yeah.
And we'd clean it out, and then we'd go about 15 feet, and it would fill up again.
Yeah. Anyway. Short, long story short, we finally got it to a harder point, part of the lake. And
not much harder. Carolyn and I dropped off the wings in total exhaustion.
Right.
And the Tiger was going away. Keith was in the baggage compartment
right.
to get
we
the CG
Keith
back.
In the baggage compartment.
And the airplane was going at walking speed. And we walked off of the dry lake. And we found a structure. Apparently some old hermit was in,
yeah.
And we pounded on the door. We were dying. We needed some water, and he wouldn't open the door.
That's right. So we
kept walking towards the road.
Right.
And Mike, well, go ahead.
Okay. So Keith and I flew back to Mojave Airport, cleaned out the wheels, and got a big 5-gallon drum of water, and we borrowed Bert's brand new then
you took
Ford
time
van.
To clean off the wheels
yeah,
while we
did.
Were out there sucking.
And then, and then
he came back with a 5-gallon Sparklets bottle of
right,
water.
Right, and then we drove all the way back, and that was a hell of a long drive.
Yeah.
And we get there, and we drive on this dirt road and get down towards the dry lake, and we see these two people crawling on their hands and feet very slowly towards us. And it was Bert and Carolyn. And I thought they were pulling our legs, but I think they were really on their last legs, you know?
I'll never tell you.
Listen, Sally, did they ever give you a raise?
And you know what we did? You know what we did after that? Well, first of all, we drank a lot of that water going back to Mojave.
We went back,
we turned a hose on that Grumman Tiger, and we flew and had lunch in Catalina.
That's right. We went to Catalina Island, and it was not nearly as hot.
I wanted
and
you to
there.
See that you could have fun right. in California.
That's right. And it was a great introduction to the area, and I've lived there ever since.
So, Bert, the very...
I'll tell you, Mike and Sally lived at RAF initially. They didn't have a house. So here's Mike and Sally and two kids, and I had an old water bed, and I moved it in there and filled it up in the drafting room for they'd have a place to stay until they could get a house. And I'm going to show, once we go start going through the slides, what I did for their hot water for their shower.
Okay. Let me go back to Very Vegan. And this is, again, a serious question. Where does an idea come from?
Well, that was an easy one. From 65 to 72, I was a flight test engineer for United States Air Force airplanes during the Vietnam War at Edwards.
Yeah.
And one of my jobs, actually two of my jobs, involved the F-4 Phantom, which in those days was really a throaty beast of an airplane.
That's right.
Not a very good one, and I got in trouble for saying so to a general once. But I was always the guy that had to sit in the back seat. And, you know, I had real important work, like I had to tell the pilot what the next maneuver is, and then I had to write down the counter number, and I had to turn on the cameras, and then I had to write down whatever he told me.
Every test point.
Turn off the data, and then we go on the next, you know, that kind of stuff. And some of the maneuvers were just awful. Like, for example, we needed to determine the longitudinal damping, and we did that by a pilot with a recorder playing his ear. He'd pump the stick at different frequencies. Hmm. Now, you do that at 500 or 600 knots. Now you're doing up and down, and your stomach goes way down here, and then your whatever's in it is up here. And it was real common. We called the airplane the world's largest stomach pump. So here's the thing. I never got to fly in the front seat, and I knew from my experience learning to fly, I get sick when I'm not flying, but I don't get sick when I'm flying. I wanted a fighter of my own, and that's why I built the Very Vegan.